Welcome to this seminar. Thank you all for coming. It's great to see so many people here. We're here for a seminar by our very own Jonathan Mice, researcher in the International Inequalities Institute, who will be speaking on the paradox of inequality, income inequality, and belief in meritocracy go hand in hand. Jonathan will speak for about half an hour, so there'll be plenty of time for questions. If I may, I have, as always, a few announcements for the next events coming up. So tomorrow on at 12:15 to 11 to 1:15, we'll have a seminar that's part of the series on migration, ethnicity, and race, titled "Infinite Difference, Limited Recognition: Digital Markings of the City of Refuge." So it promises to be very interesting. And then on Saturday, we have an event titled "Can Wellbeing Economics Work? New Zealand's Attempt to Get Off GDP." So, and that's, yes, Saturday 26th between 1 and 2:30. If you're very dedicated and want to come in on a Saturday, promises to be an excellent event. And then finally, our next seminar of this inequality series on the 5th of February will be Andy Summers speaking on the missing billions, measuring top incomes in the UK. Okay, so floor's all yours.
All right. Thanks everyone for coming. This talk is supposed to be being recorded right now, audio I think as well as video. At least I have a microphone, that so hopefully it works and I won't have to add my voice later, which would be hilarious. I'm kind of hoping on that actually. The presentation today is based on a paper which will come out tomorrow with the Socioeconomic Review. So I will probably skim over some details. So if you're interested in those details, some of the background, some of the current literature on the topic that I won't be sort of discussing at length in the presentation, please have a look at the paper. Or shoot me an email if you have trouble finding it, and I'm happy to share it with you. And like Luna already said, there will be plenty of time for Q&A after the presentation, which will be relatively concise. The other thing I should say is that I'm using the term inequality in this presentation a lot. By the focus in this project has been on economic inequality and an income inequality more specifically. So whereas I acknowledge that there's many important dimensions to the inequalities that we study at the Institute, I'll probably be using the shorthand inequality a lot to just refer to the economic dimension. All right, so the starting point for my presentation is the well-known fact that inequalities are on the rise. Since the 1980s, income gains have been concentrated with a small top segment of societies whose fortunes have grown at a much faster pace than the rest of society, to the point where today the top 10% across the West, this is the United States, but the late Tony Atkinson and Stephen Jenkins have produced a similar graph for the UK. The top 10% today across the West takes in about a third of all income and owns about two-thirds of all wealth. In effect, we have returned, as this graph from Thomas Piketty's book really neatly shows, we've returned to the level of income inequality that marked the pre-war era, specifically the Great Depression of the 20s and 30s. Now, this dramatic rise in income inequality has certainly not gone unnoticed. If you will, for once, the work of social scientists has been taken seriously, has received lots of attention in press, as well as in politics, in public conversations, to the point where I think the stark state of inequalities today is captured in images like these of a wealthy man tipping the scales versus the rest of society, or in provocative photographs like this one. So one may conclude, as this cartoon certainly does, that inequality is squarely on the public agenda. So what you see here is one elevator marked for the wealthy, with the lift operator calling going up, and another elevator meant for the rest of society, which unfortunately is out of order, or out of service. So while these cartoons and photographs may sort of reflect what we think is growing attention to public, to inequality in the public and beyond, certainly among our kind of progressively minded people, what is striking is how little empirical research and evidence there has been describing increasing public concerns about inequality. So whereas scholarly work quite neatly describes the reality of increasing trends, I have yet to see convincing empirical evidence that people are getting increasingly concerned. So for instance, here is the trend, and I think I just tested it, and there's no way you can see what the slide shows in the back. So there will be plenty of this kind of material is much more easily presented in the paper. But I'll sort of try to talk you through it. So what this slide is intending to show is the trend in public concerns about inequalities, where I've marked by a vertical line the 1980s, which is the point where inequalities are really taking off in many countries around the West. And as perhaps you cannot unfortunately see, but what this graph does show is that only in a few countries, I think Hungary and Switzerland stand out, does there seem to be an uptick in public concern about inequality. In the overwhelming majority of societies, concerns are either stable or they're actually decreasing as inequality is growing. So I've zoomed in here, maybe you can see that a little bit better. This is the UK, the trend in public concerns about inequality in the UK, which actually dips after the 1980s. This is the United States, which is basically a monotonously decreasing trend in concerns. And this is Norway, where the decrease has been relatively large as well. So here we are in a situation where inequalities are on the rise. There's no evidence of growing public concern about inequality. In fact, today I'll be showing that citizens in some of the most unequal societies are the least concerned about it. So how do we make sense of this paradox? In short, I'll be arguing that unequal societies are marked by greater social distance between the rich and the poor, such that people on either side of this growing income divide are underestimating the extent of inequality, as well as the role of structural forces, structural disadvantages and advantages that shape people's lives. So what follows, I'll start by covering current explanations for why concerns about inequality aren't as high as one may expect them to be. In short, it may be that people either don't know about the actual extent of inequality, or it may be that they do not care because they think that what produces these inequalities is a more or less meritocratic process. I'll then be presenting what is my own synthesis of existing explanations, and from that framework I'll be deriving hypotheses that I'll test. I'll test them with International Social Survey program data. And where I'll be looking at what is the impact of income inequality on citizens' concerns and citizens' belief about inequalities. And I'll conclude by discussing what I think are the implications of this research for other research, future research, as well as for theory building and for politics and policy. All right, so the first explanation given in this literature that tries to make sense of the lack or low level of public concerns is focused on what people know and what they don't know, on this cognitive process. Simply put, citizens may be misinformed about the state of income inequality. So for instance, Michael Norton's work, widely cited based on surveys around the world, documents just how misinformed people are Specifically, people really underestimate and have no idea how much more CEOs, for instance, make relative to their ground level employees. So in the British version of this survey, when asked, respondents put the income ratio between a CEO and a ground level worker at about 15 to 1. In reality, it's closer to 90 to 1. And if you ask people what would they like this income ratio to be, they'll tell you something like 5 to 1. Right? So there's big discrepancies both in what people would like reality to be, but certainly also about how they think the state of affairs is like. Other research describes similar misperceptions concerning wealth inequality, concerning racial inequality, as well as health inequalities. But people's misperceptions extend also to what they perceive as the trend in economic inequality. So William Franco's work, where I stole this graph from, is a good illustration of this fact. So what you see here is the changing relative income share of the very wealthy in the United States compared to the poor. So what you can see from this graph is that the share of the very wealthy and the gap between rich and poor really starts growing in the 1980s and then continues to grow to today. So this is the real trend in this one dimension in economic inequality. So let's see what people think is the trend. So that looks like this. So I hope you can see it. It's basically a curve peaking in the 1980s and then dropping again. So this is based on public opinion data, yearly records where people are asked about their impression of the growing gap between rich and poor, or whether that is growing or not. So obviously, people don't know the facts. But obviously, people are misinformed. So if the problem is simply people's misperceptions, why not give people factual information? Why not tell them how it really is? So this is exactly what a lot of recent survey experiments have asked. In these kind of experiments, people give a randomly selected treatment group factual information about either the state of inequalities, low levels of social mobility, or people's own position in the income distribution, and then see how do people respond to this information compared to a control group who does not have access to that information. Their findings give reason to pause. So whereas some studies find that correcting people's misperceptions really heightens their concerns and also makes them want to politically address inequalities, other studies find that whereas some of these studies may heighten people's concerns, it leaves their political attitudes unchanged. And in fact, yet other scholars find that telling people about the actual level of economic inequality can also lead them to upwardly adjust their tolerance for inequality. In fact, telling people just how stark the state of income inequality is may normalize that and make people more accepting of it. In other words, misperceptions may not be so easily resolved. There may be more to it than simply an unawareness of the facts. So tapping into what may be a complementary or different process is a second line of research that focuses instead on ideology, on morality. In short, the explanation is people may not care about inequality, not because they don't know, but because they don't mind. For instance, they may not mind because they think that income inequality reflects a meritocratic process. And why would we be upset about inequalities if we think that income differences reflect the hard work and talents of some people? And why would we care about poverty if we deeply believe that the economic struggles of some people are solely due to their own bad choices or lack of hard work? So social psychologists, they describe how basically everyone has sort of a need to believe in meritocracy, for it's a lot easier to live in a society where some people don't work hard enough, make bad choices, than to fully accept that ours is a deeply unequal and unjust place. And cultural and political sociologists describe how societal elites especially may have an interest in maintaining their advantages by reproducing these kinds of narratives, the American dream being a good example of such a narrative. What they argue is that social closure is a lot easier to maintain if you can draw on popular beliefs that people's privileges are the result of a meritocratic process. So I believe that this is an important part of the explanation. But what's missing here is an explanation why people in more unequal societies may be more believing in meritocracy. So what I'm trying to do in my own work is draw on both these different explanations in arguing how growing economic inequality may create the very social conditions for its legitimation. Economic inequality, I argue, is transforming the social and spatial landscape of society. It is increasing the social distance between rich and poor. So to visualize what I conceive of as sort of the new reality of inequality, these are the kind of settings that are becoming more common. So this is Brazil, as photographed from above by means of a drone by Johnny Miller, who is an Atlantic Fellow at our institute. This is Kenya. And this is South Africa. So whereas these are pictures, of course, of the Global South, I posit that we can increasingly find similar images from Western cities and suburbs. I argue that unequal societies are marked by greater social distance, meaning that the rich and the poor increasingly live their lives in separate neighborhoods, separate schools, separate workplaces, and they befriend and date and marry people from similar socioeconomic circles. From their position of increasing insulation, then, neither the rich or the poor can really see the lives of others living across this income divide. As C. Wright Mills said it, people's perceptions of society are bounded by the private orbits in which they live, meaning that they underestimate the extent of inequality, i.e. the size of the income gap, as well as the role of structural barriers and advantages that got people to where they are. In the absence of having any interactions across this income divide, people do not get to experience, see, witness real counter evidence to the meritocratic myth that is produced and diffused by government policies, by neoliberalism, as well as in the books, the movies, and inspirational stories that we tell ourselves and others. So from this framework flow the following two hypotheses. One, greater income inequality creates social conditions under which people develop a stronger belief in meritocracy. And two, stronger popular belief in meritocracy makes people less concerned about inequality. So in what follows, I'll be testing these hypotheses using data from the International Social Survey Program, the ISSP, which is a cross-national survey started in the 1980s by a small group of Western countries and has since grown to span two decades and two dozens of Western nations. My main analyses are drawing on survey waves in the 1980s, 1990s, and 2010s. Data for each country and period come from a representative sample of the adult population. So by pooling all these different survey waves, I can study trends in country-level income inequality as well as popular beliefs about inequality for approximately 50,000 citizens in 23 countries over this 25-year time period between 1987 and 2012. Analytically, my strategy is to estimate hierarchical linear models where I am trying to explain individual citizens' beliefs and concerns by looking at the impact of between-country differences and over time changes within societies. And as a supplement to the survey ways, I'm also drawing on the fact that people interviewed at different time periods were themselves born in different times and under varying conditions of inequality. So by classifying people into five-year birth cohorts, I can also show you what the trend in beliefs is over time based on the year in which people are born, as I will in a few slides from here. So I'm measuring concerns about inequality as people's responses to this question or statement, really, income differences are too high. It's a very general question. It's far from perfect, and in fact, a lot of people agree to this general statement. But as long as it means about the same thing in different time periods and at different time points, it shouldn't matter too much for my analysis where I'm trying to trace trends in people's responses to this question. Moreover, as it stands, it's the question most used in the literature. For better measures, we have to wait till the next wave of the International Social Survey Program, which will come out in the next few years, which will have better questions, which I'm very excited about. So there'll be questions about people's feelings of anger about income differences, people's perception of the fairness of those differences, as well as how well they think the government is doing to address them. So that'll be great new data to look at in a few years from now. But this is basically what we have. This is the best that we currently have. My measure of belief in meritocracy is based on people's belief that getting ahead in society is determined by hard work. And I'm contrasting belief in meritocracy with belief in structural inequality, which is based on people's responses that instead getting ahead in society is based on knowing the right people and coming from a wealthy family. And I measure income inequality by the post-tax household Gini coefficient taken from Milanovic All Gini's data set. And I'm including control in all the analysis for a measure of economic development, basically cross domestic products from OECD records. All right. So with that, let's proceed to the analysis. So again, I'm afraid you cannot fully see. So let me just try to describe what this is. This is a trend in people's belief in meritocracy across different countries and survey ways, as well as over cohorts over time. Added again is the vertical line for the year in which income inequalities really took off. So what these, I think, 23 individual graphs show is that almost everywhere, a belief in meritocracy is either stable or it has strengthened after the 1980s. So this is the U.S. marking increasing levels or increasing popular belief in meritocracy, actually approximating 100%. This is the United Kingdom, where the uptake is actually following this trend of higher or growing inequality in the 1980s. And this is Germany, where belief in meritocracy is growing spectacularly. So with that, we've seen the trend in both popular beliefs and the trend in popular concerns, but how do these correlate with actual levels of inequality? That's what I'll be showing right now. So shown here is along the horizontal axis is the Gini coefficient of income inequality, and along the vertical axis is people's level of concern about inequality. So as I hope you can see, there is a negative relationship between the two, meaning that higher inequality goes together with lesser concerns about it. To be fair, the countries right here, namely Australia and the US, seem to be sort of driving this relationship, so if we take them out, what you basically get is a flat line, a no relationship between actual inequality and people's concerns about inequality. Now let's look at the correlation between income inequality and popular beliefs about it. So here we see a moderately strong, positive relationship between actual inequality and belief in meritocracy. And we see a negative relationship between actual inequality and belief in structural inequality. Now, these are, of course, just indicative of what may be causal relationships. The real question is, of course, if individual citizens' beliefs and concerns are impacted by the society where they live. So to figure out that question, I will be pulling all countries and time periods together to identify what is the impact of income inequality in a given country and at a given time. I'm controlling for both general trends over time, for country-specific factors, as well as for individual characteristics like a person's social class, their education, whether they're religious or not, etc. So on the next slides, I'll be showing you predictive margins based on those hierarchical linear models. So here we have individuals' belief in meritocracy on the left side, and individuals' belief in structural inequality on the right side. I hope you can see this. Maybe the confidence intervals aren't easily seen from there, but I'll try to describe. So basically, the association between income inequality and belief in meritocracy, as well as belief in structural inequality, is about the same direction, at least, for all social classes. Namely, citizens living in more unequal societies hold stronger beliefs in meritocracy and hold weaker beliefs in structural inequality. The latter pattern, so the pattern concerning structural inequality, is pronounced especially for the middle classes, the lower two lines here. So working class citizens are generally more believing in structural inequality than the middle classes, and their beliefs are a little bit less impacted by the society or level of inequality in the society where they live. Now, these are citizens' beliefs based on the countries where they live, but what about their society growing more unequal or more equal over time? How does that impact people's beliefs? So this graph addresses that question. So on the vertical axis, again, we have people's belief about inequality, and on the horizontal axis, we have the change in income inequality in over time. So positive points mean increasing levels of income inequality, and negative numbers here mean that societies are becoming more equal economically. So basically what you see here is that citizens living in countries there where income inequality has grown believe more strongly in meritocracy, whereas we do not find such a relationship for people's belief in structural inequalities, basically a flat line. So those beliefs are more stable over time. So to summarize, the analysis suggests that living in a country with the lowest levels of inequality, citizens believe that meritocratic and structural factors both are important in determining who gets ahead in society, as we see here on the left hand of the slide. In societies that are most unequal, people believe a lot more in meritocracy and a lot less in structural inequality. And as inequality rises, people tend to believe more strongly in meritocracy. Now, how does all of this impact people's concerns about inequality? So shown here is the level of public concern, or the level of individual citizens' concern for the working classes, the lower middle classes, and upper middle class separately. So the level of concern is plotted on the vertical axis, and the horizontal axis shows popular beliefs in meritocracy on the left and popular beliefs in structural inequality on the right. So as theorized, the analysis indicates that living in a society with strong popular belief in meritocracy dampens people's concerns about inequality. With the strongest impact being on the working classes, where the line is most steep. On the right side, the graph shows that a strong belief in structural inequality goes together with a heightening of concern about inequality, the impact here being strongest for the middle classes. In total, beliefs about inequality explain about 0.4 and 0.7 of people's, of a standard deviation difference in people's concerns about inequality. So these are sizable effects, I would say. All right, let me conclude by exploring what I think are the implications of this research. So as for research, I acknowledge that there's a lot of important work done in the field of social psychology and cultural sociology on the other side. That is to say, that I acknowledge that human psychology, ideology, public narratives, national narratives like that of the American Dream are important factors shaping people's beliefs about inequality. But since inequality is expressed socially and spatially, I think that it's the meso-institutional level that we need to take more seriously if we want to understand how people experience and make sense of inequality. In other words, the middle, I think, is where the action is. That said, in this research, I've had to make a lot of assumptions about what is the spatial and social impact of growing inequalities that I haven't been able to test and study directly. So how exactly does economic inequality increase social segregation? How does it impact stratification? How does it impact network homophily? Who are most impacted by these processes? Those are some of the questions. There's some research out there on this topic, which I discuss in the paper, but I think it's still an extremely fruitful field for future research. When it comes to theory, I've argued that unequal societies may create the very conditions of the legitimation of these levels of inequality. That is, economic inequality increases social distance. Social distance promotes belief in meritocracy, and belief in meritocracy legitimizes high levels of inequality. So this has two political ramifications. First, democratic publics may be caught in a feedback loop where more inequality paradoxically leads people to experience less of it and care less about it. Breaking that feedback loop requires taking seriously people's beliefs as well as their experiences with inequality and designing public policies to bring the two in closer alignment. Specifically, if we want citizens to develop a better understanding of the society in which they live, we need to create conditions for more interactions across social class lines in the workplace, at school, as well as in our neighborhoods. Key to that challenge, I believe, is to diversify ethnically as well as socioeconomically our neighborhoods and our schools. So what tomorrow will look like is up to the next generation, but it is up to us, however, to decide what world our children will grow up in and consequently through what prism they come to understand their society. So let me end there, but not before I acknowledge the financial support I received from the Tyriakian Fund at Harvard University. Thank my thesis supervisors. Thank participants at RC28 at Columbia University for the feedback I received on an earlier draft of this paper, as well as express my gratitude to participants in the LSE Sociology Writing Group on the comments I got from them, which has been very helpful in producing this paper. All right, thank you very much for your attention.